Genevieve Abdo is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with her in Cambridge. She's written a book about Egypt she calls No God But God, Egypt and the Triumph of Islam. I want to go back just where we were when we broke away. The idea of democracy being embedded in Islam, that there are fundamentals to democracy that could blossom in an entirely different way than we have seen it in the West. Help me with this. I can't see it yet. Tell me these democratic principles that could be championed out of a dramatically different tradition.
In Egypt, the Islamists, who we're talking about, they want something very basic, which are free elections.
And, which they don't have.
Which they don't have. And they want to be able, for example, to have an Islamic-oriented political party. Now, in Egypt, for many years, any political party which has any sort of religious association has been banned, Christian or Muslim. And let's not forget, there are a lot of Christians, actually. I think the statistic is about 10 million. It varies, but 10 million Coptic Christians in Egypt, they're not allowed to have a party either.
Does that mean they're not represented?
It means that they can run in the elections, but in terms of how they are identified, that's not distinguished from the only other parties which are allowed to run, which are completely tied to President Mubarak's government. In Egypt, for example, you can't really run in an election, for the most part, unless your party has been given a rubber stamp by the government, unless your party more or less supports the government. Now, during the last parliamentary elections, some Islamists were elected to the parliament in greater numbers than we've seen in recent years, and this was considered a big step forward. But
so why should they be identified as religious parties if they can get elected out of other venues?
Well, the only way that they were elected this time was that they ran as independents. Most of them, anyway, they ran as independents. Because once there's actually a law in Egypt which says that religious parties aren't allowed to function. I mean, that you cannot create a party based on religion. And this is a way that the government has tried to keep out any sort of Islamic influence within the corridors of power. Now, that doesn't mean that they've been successful, because obviously any time you have the transformation of a society, you don't have people don't need to wear labels that say, I'm an Islamist, mm-hmm. who are sitting in the ministries or are sitting in places of power.
Again, but this is as compared to being what we kind of loosely call a secularist? Is that the dichotomy that's drawn here? People who are not basing their judgments and opinions on a religious tradition? People who want to westernize? People who want to be what we think of as modern? Is that the comparison?
Not really, because the Islamists that I'm talking about, they want to be modern. They want to be Western, but they want to pick from the Western world those aspects of Western culture that are in accordance with their religious beliefs. Now, that doesn't, for example, mean that they would advocate showing what they consider to be risque films in the cinemas. And the Islamists in Egypt, with the help of these theologians that we talked about earlier at El Azhar, they have made a lot of progress in banning films in Egypt. Not only Western films, but films that were produced by Egyptians. There's a very famous filmmaker in Egypt called Yusuf Shaheen, and he won many prizes at Cannes Film Festival, and he's internationally known. He was forced to withdraw one of his films a few years ago from cinemas in Egypt, even though the government permitted this film to be shown, because the Islamists and El Azhar said, this film is un-Islamic. You have to withdraw it from the cinemas.
That seems to raise, you know, it's, in some ways, you know, I'm tracking up to a certain point. It's easy to see what you're saying in terms, relatively easy, that the modernization of Islam and doing it in an appropriate fashion, in an Islamic fashion, and that Islamic society is interested in the future, wants to participate in the future, but wants to do it their way, and that democracy is a piece of that. But what you're talking about there sounds a lot like a serious restriction on the ability to share knowledge, free speech, as we encode it in the American culture. And that the reconciling a desire for democracy and the absence of free speech is a challenge. How do we do that? How do they do that?
Yes, definitely. And you've touched on probably the most sensitive issue in this whole conversation about how can you have a democracy without freedom of expression? Because, of course, in Islam, this has become a huge barrier between East and West. What restrictions should be placed on the press, for example, in a country like Egypt? What restrictions should be placed on the arts? And the Islamic world really believes that this is a matter of religion, that this isn't a matter as we would classify it as a universal human right. And I think that that's an important distinction. And that's where we become very confused by these discussions of how there can be democracy without freedom of expression.
Well, and you quote several places, or at least a couple of times, people saying that, well, of course, in this country, the United States, or in Europe, no one would be allowed to insult Jesus. It just could not happen.
Yes.
Which is
That's an assertion they make, the Egyptians make.
I think is not strictly the case, though, you know, you could get yourself probably in a lot of trouble. But what seems striking is the just fundamentally different predicates. And I think it's what your book does so well is make plausible, tangible, demonstrable the really radically different ways in which people, Egyptians and Westerners, other Westerners, see the world.
Take that a little bit farther and tell us what they would say are universal. If freedom of expression is not universal and central to a democracy, okay, we won't argue about that. What is? What would they say in addition to free elections?
Well, first of all, they would say that freedom of expression is central to a democracy as long as that freedom does not conflict with Islamic principles. And that means, in the film that I mentioned earlier, it was believed among the Islamists that this film was an insult to the Prophet Muhammad, because the film, in a very indirect way, talked about religious matters. So there are a lot of qualifiers in what we're talking about. There, of course, the Islamists aren't against freedom of expression, but they're against any freedom which they deem to violate religious principles. They're not, for example, they believe, for example, that Egyptian women, they would prefer that they wear a veil. Now, unlike in a country such as Iran, where every woman has to wear a veil, I had to wear a veil and sometimes even a chador in Iran during the 3 years I lived there, even though I'm a Christian. The moderates in Egypt say they would never require a Christian to wear a veil because this is not what Christianity calls for. Christianity doesn't believe that women should be covered. So this is why I think that we have to distinguish between this kind of moderate trend and the more extremist trends that now are catching all the headlines.
Well, and part of what you're saying and listening on the issue of freedom of expression, even in this country, it is not an absolute, unmitigated, total right. I mean, we constrain free speech in this country. The difference, you know, as you describe it, is that there is a caveat that we are not accustomed to, which is the religious perspective that free speech ends when you start getting into religious issues, specifically with respect to Islam.
Yes, absolutely. You bring up a very, very good point. And when people in the Middle East always ask me, is there freedom of expression in America? I always say it depends upon who you are, and it depends on your point of view. I think to some extent the difference in the United States is that we go through a socialization process so that we think in a certain way because we're socialized. If you look at even the mainstream press in this country, now people are being very patriotic. If you turn the television on, anybody who should dare to suggest that U.S. policies in any way played a role in the attacks on September 11th are ostracized from the discussion. Why? Because we're now completely absorbed in this patriotic sentiment that's going on around the country. Now, is this censorship? Not really. But this is part of our whole psychology as a nation. So how is that psychology in a secular state different from the kinds of values that Muslims have in their country based not in socialization, but their socialization process is completely related to religion?
And I think that, you know, what I guess I would answer is that in this case, in this country, you know, the disagreement, those people who took a counter view are not subject to the full weight and majesty of the United States government. You know, they are not, we wouldn't expect to be subject to prosecution and to conviction.
Yes,
of course. Having done those things.
Yes, of course, that's true. Obviously, the greatest punishment would just be to be silenced, which has happened to some intellectuals in this country on this subject. So, yes, that's an important distinction.
I want to go back, just in case you have a fuller answer to that. What other universals would the Islamists be right up there championing?
They champion, in general, human rights. For example, now in Egypt, torture is routine in the prisons. Any person, particularly political criminals, who are considered to be a threat to the state in some way, they're not allowed, generally, due process. They're tried often without lawyers before military judges in military tribunals. In these courts, there's no appeal process. These are some of the kinds of issues that the Islamists would change. They would create a judicial system that they believe is more just.
Janine Abdo is our guest. We are in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I wanted to say Boston, but I won't. Geneve has written a book called No God But God, and she talks in it about Egypt and the triumph of Islam. But Russell and I are pleased to be with you, Geneve, and we're all going to be back in just a moment.